Jacksonville's First Coast Honda dealers present the following presentation. High Flyin' with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener is taking off. I'm learning to fly. Today's High Flying Show is presented by the Casa Marina Hotel and Restaurant, by Kuhn Flowers, by Hardball Creative, by Advanced Business Solutions, by Ascent Aviation, by Aircraft General Supply, by Beach Banners, and by the Hidden Hills Golf Club. And now, live from the cockpit of 1010XL at 92.5 FM, here's the host of High Flying, Jack O'Brien.
And a very good morning, everybody, and a happy Father's Day to all on this June the 20th, correct?
Yes, sir.
June 20, 2021. It is Father's Day, and this is the High Flying Show. And I am Jack O'Brien, along with my staff of very able and trusted pilots and folks in the aviation industry. We'll start with just introducing everybody briefly. Garfield Benson, our naval aviator and commercial airline pilot, is on the phone. Gar will be with us this morning, along with Robert Cam, air traffic control specialist for over 30 years and also an instrument and commercial rated pilot. Did I get that right?
Absolutely correct.
Bill Stull is in the room, also a commercial pilot and an instrument rated pilot and very, very capable pilot in his own right. Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
And our birthday boy, the man that turned 50 on Thursday of last week, along with my son Cameron, by the way. You guys do share that birthday on June 17th. And Joel celebrated the magical number 50 this past Thursday. Congratulations to you.
Well, thank you. I made it.
Made it to 50.
It was a good time.
It's hard to make it to 50. Try making it to 60.
Well, that's, you know.
That is your next goal. Actually, 51 for you would be your next goal. But the
baby steps.
You didn't wish Joel a happy Father's Day.
I'm getting to that, and I know I don't have to do that. But back, let's get back to this 50th birthday thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's my understanding that there was a party.
Yeah, I knew nothing about it.
I'm so not blaming you for anything. I'm just asking, was there a party?
It was a large gathering of folks in an aircraft hangar.
And so much so that I started receiving texts later in the evening asking me why I wasn't there, what's going on. They're meeting people in other bars. Everybody in town knew about it.
Except the Wiener. The Wiener didn't know
about
it until I got there.
The Wiener and Jack O'Brien didn't know about it. Well, I did actually at the end because I think I talked to you or Bill about it, and you guys told me. But I had a Guns N' Hoses event on Thursday night that I had to attend.
That sounds interesting.
Well, all I know is there were a lot
He's talking about Guns N' Hoses, and he just lost himself.
There were pictures about this party in a hangar.
Did he give us
and they
show?
Actually built a banner. Who built the banner? Was that you that built the banner?
I haven't built the banner.
I planned to, but one of Joel's employees. I had to the illusion of being busy, so Ivan took care of the job.
Yeah, we had a banner in the back of the hangar. It said, happy 50th birthday.
Something. 50 years of the Wiener.
The Wiener.
That's right.
Look good.
Play on words at all there.
All right. So in honor of your birthday and my son Cameron, who turned 41. Can you believe that? I have a son that's almost as old as you.
Well, you're like 12 when you had a first?
By the way, Matt LeVay is our engineer today and our co. He's in the room pushing the buttons like most pilots would do. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, guys. Good to be here with y'all.
It's great to have you here. Why don't we fly a little birthday music for Joel? Let's wish him one more time, one last time. That little birthday song I picked out for you. Everybody loves the Beatles. Yeah. Get it all. Coming at you. Right here. 1010XL. Yeah. Right. In my old days, a top 40 disc jockey, and here are the Beatles. All righty, that's enough of that. All right, Matt, thank you for that. Thank you, Joel, for being here for all these years on the High Flying Show as my co-host.
And, 6 or 7 years?
7 years now.
7 years.
This is our seventh year of High Flying Show, believe me.
Man.
Yeah.
7 years.
Man.
We're getting old.
And I think all of us have been together for the entire time.
Negative.
Just about. Oh, you.
We added him. We added him later.
Do you know what year you added me to this episode? No, we're not going to talk about that.
I do not.
I remember that day, though, as it was yesterday.
Because it was yesterday.
It was I think you've been here.
It was December of, I want to say, 17.
17, you've been here 4 years now, huh?
Yeah. It went by that quick.
Oh, by the way, I've been asked to remind our listening audience that 1010XL is going to have regular U.S. Open updates today and throughout the day as Mackenzie Hughes, Louis Oosthuizen, and Russell Henley are all at 5 under par. I selected Phil Mickelson, and he's letting me down here. He's plus 7.
I picked John Rahm.
But that's a pretty good pick. What's he at?
Well, he got pulled out of the last tournament, so we're hoping he actually makes it through this tournament.
Well, he made the cut.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
Colin Morikawa is also one of my selections. He's still in it. He's minus 1-4 back. Sorry to see Richard Bland, that Englishman who's like me. He's old.
I got to say, your enunciation of players is spot on today.
Well, I'm a trained professional.
Well, I'm just going to say.
You know, I made a major error last. I was a ring announcer for Guns N' Hoses last night. They had like 8,000 or 9,000 people. There's a big crowd. Had the old Journey singer Steve Aggeri there with his band Six Wire following the fights. And in the second, now this was a unique Guns N' Hoses because they brought in New York City fighters to take on the combined efforts of our firefighters and police. And it was a shortened card. It was only 9 fights, so they had time for the band. And they pulled a fast one on me. When typically you have the firefighters in the red corner and the police officers in the blue corner. And as I've been doing this event for 20 years, and it's ingrained in me. And in the second fight, they put the firefighter in the blue corner and the police officer in the red corner. So I started introducing it badly, and the referee's kind of waving at me a little bit. And so 8,000 people are standing there in silence while I'm walking over to the referee going, "What do you want?" He goes, "Man, you're introducing the wrong guy." I am? And this is all in front of 8,000 people. I'm just sitting there going, "What do you mean?"
Of course, you're not hearing this conversation.
Just he and I.
Did you ever make that kind of mistake at Florida Field?
I've made a lot of mistakes at Florida Field. I've made a lot of mistakes at Jaguars games. When you've got a hot mic in front of 70, 80, 90,000 people, you are prone to make errors now and then, and you just kind of slough them off and move on. I did have Andre Dawson catch a touchdown pass once instead of Andre Rison.
Being the Cubs fan that you are, back in the 80s, that was appropriate.
I was out in the parking lot after the game, and my buddy comes up to me. He says, "Hey, Jack, I've been looking in this Jaguars program here, and I can't for the life of me find Andre Dawson on the roster." And I said, "Well, yeah, I know. You're going to rub that in for..."
Because he plays right field in Wrigley.
He did.
I got a question for you, though. Yeah. When you PA announce for these football games and stuff, do you miss the banner towing sound, the planes doing the banner towing over the... You know, that constant airplane sound? Remember that back in the day, of course, you listen to old recordings, you would hear maybe 3 or 4 airplanes flying around, and you get that the whole time. Do you miss that from the press box at all?
I don't hear it, nor do I see it.
No.
Was never an airplane. That was just a guy standing there going...
On the old recordings?
Plus, I'm very focused, see. Well, I wouldn't hear it or pay attention to it because I'm such a focused individual.
Really?
Yes. Plus, when you're doing PA work in most big stadiums, there's about a second delay. So when you're doing the PA, you can't pay attention to that or it'll really mess you up.
Wow, I did not know that.
Last night in the arena, there was like a quarter second delay, but I'm so used to it now that my son does a few of the fights for me. I've introduced him to the world of ring announcing. And he came after the first fight he worked. He said, "Well, there's a delay. I don't know how to handle it." I said, "Well, if you don't want to do it, I'll take over." He went, oh, no, I got..." And he wore this ridiculous hat in the ring. He's trying to make a shtick for himself, you know, as a ring announcer. And
there's no delay in air traffic, by the way.
No, I better not be.
There's no delay in aviation.
All right, by the way, it is Father's Day, and we hope all you dads, Bob and Bill and Joel. Joel, I know you're a dad somewhere. And I'm a dad.
Thank you for the seed.
I'm actually a grandfather. My two of my grandchildren came to the fights last night. But I have good news for sons and daughters of dads. And I want to bring this up and start our show. The airline industry, as we know, over the last year and a half, has struggled due to the pandemic. However, at the moment, the airline industry is now expected to surge, And I've seen it personally. I went to Vegas a couple of weeks ago. Planes were full, and every time I got on an airplane.
It's busy.
Yeah.
It's busy time. Busy airspace, too.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I came through Atlanta last night, and they were just lining up.
Is it hard to get in and out of there when that happens?
You just got to get in line.
Yeah.
And in a small airplane, to keep in line with the larger jets, you got to be on top of your game.
Well, you got to be very careful about wake turbulence, especially.
You got to be at least 6 miles in trail of the guy in front of you, and you fly a little higher, and you got to keep your speed up. You got to keep 170 mile an hour till 5 mile final.
But what if when you're on the taxiway or you're in the run up area, and you see a jet coming up down the taxiway, and you're almost ready to go, but you haven't been.
You stay 100-150 yards behind them,
uh-huh.
About a football field.
But however, what if the big jet kind of circles near you and the engine thrust comes right in?
Well, you avoid being in that position.
How do you do that?
Well, if the jet in front of you is going to turn left, you want to be on the left side of the taxiway because he's going to blow trash to the right side.
What if he's turning right and you're on the left?
You don't put yourself there.
Oh. All right, well, see, now
that's controllers, you're trained not to put them there as well.
Right, and they'll give you, if you notice, there's two taxiways to every runway in Atlanta.
Right.
They'll put you on a different one so you are not involved in that and don't get in a pinch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's.
I don't necessarily think that's the reason.
Well.
I'm just saying.
They're there for multiple things. But.
Necessary? No, I think it's the reason for spacing. So, in other words, when you're going to Atlanta, there are four directions they're going to push you out of. And so the ground controller is sequencing the departure line so that you don't send multiple guys out the same way. Right. So you, being an outlier, are going to be the wild card in that whole situation. So one guy's trying to keep the line going, and you're getting put out there. So you're like a spare departure.
Yeah,
it's not for wake turbulence.
I'm going to fit in the hole.
You're going to – yeah, that's exactly right.
The student teaching the instructor.
I do that a lot, Jack. I'm going to tell you. When we're in the air, I'm teaching them stuff.
Well, the thing is that he sees it from the different angle. Uh-huh. He's been sitting in the radar room for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in the window.
Right.
So
he ain't out there risking his butt.
That's not true.
So, and then he relays down if we see something in the cockpit that they won't see, like weather or other traffic. And the big thing now is drones. You're flying along, you see a drone. Well, they're not on the radar.
I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, but okay. When you're in that tower, you don't see it all down there on the taxiway in the run-up area.
Depends on the – so in Atlanta, we'll use Atlanta for example, they have ground radar. So it's a device – it's a system that's been in play for a long time now where they actually have a radar scope up in the tower, and tags are flying – going around taxiways, an airport diagram right there, and you can actually – when there's fogged in, it's designed for that obviously. And also the computer can track when somebody's on the runway and – it's a safety measure for the traffic on the ground.
Big, and speaking of wind, when we all know we pay attention to wind velocity, but is there anything to the point of paying attention to wind density? Are you familiar with that phrase?
Well, it would be velocity.
But no, this is a different thing. Instead of velocity, I'm talking about wind density. I was talking to a guy the other day about it, and he asked me about it. Now, I'm the last guy to ask. So there absolutely is nothing
to
that.
Yeah, I'm worried about the velocity of the wind.
Right.
You know, and
right.
And if there's any debris in it, like sand, if you go to the airport along the beach, you get sand and debris. Craig even has it because there's a lot of sand dunes around from the Mill Cove Golf Course and so forth.
Are there any animal issues at Craig Field that you run into from time to time?
There's some foxes out there, some pigs, but they usually stay off the runway.
Skunks. Jackson National.
Well, that's when
skunks.
You're out there.
Yeah. Hurlong and Cecil Field have a lot of turkeys.
Yes,
really?
A lot of turkeys.
Yes, they do.
Back in the day, an F-16 hit a pig on the runway. I'm not kidding.
Where?
At Jackson National.
JIA?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
Well, anyway, let me get back to this. The airline hiring is expected to surge. And fathers out there, if you got kids, boys or girls who are, you know, approaching the end of their high school career, and you're contemplating college, which for most dads is a pocketbook problem. But according to the Association of Flight Attendants, and we'll start here, more than 20,000 new jobs are going to open up in just the next 24 months. That'll bring the total employment up to 100,000 flight attendant positions. But when you get into pilot positions, Allegiant, Endeavor, Horizon, Delta, all hiring, enthusiastically hiring, American hiring 300 pilots by the end of this year. United hiring hundreds of pilots, they say. Air Wisconsin hiring first officers. Just to keep on Delta reactivating. You just said it a minute ago. All pilots are reactivated by October. And speaking of that, let's bring up Garfield Benson, our naval aviator and commercial airline pilot. Gar, good morning to you, and welcome aboard to the High Flying Show.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Good morning, guys. Sorry I can't be there. I missed you.
Well, we miss you too, Gar. And so now the airline industry is going to be starting to hire up again. What are your thoughts toward what the levels of employment are going to be in the airline industry?
Well, I'm sure that the airlines are going to be stymied after a period of time here when they quit having good qualified pilots being able to come into their doors. They're going to have to make a huge adjustment and start training them themselves. American Airlines, it's United Airlines, has opened up their own flying school to train pilots. Many European and Orient schools, airlines have their own training schools for their pilots. An example, Asian Airline has a big base in Washington State where they've been training pilots for the last 35 years. So it's going to be a problem. They're going to have to train internally. The military just does not have the quantity of pilots they used to have that are getting out to fill the seats. They're available for employment on the airlines today, and it's going to be a big problem for them. They're going to have to delay some expansion because of lack of qualified pilots.
Well, and when these pilots are coming back, there's a lot of rust involved. Are you saying that before they get back up in the air, there's going to be programs for them to just kind of refresh their memories?
Well, these guys have been off work since the pandemic started a year and a half ago. They haven't been doing any flying. It's a matter of coming back in the simulator, getting a warm-up, getting a check ride, and then going to the line and go back to work. It's not that big a deal. But there is some training involved, and they have to get back up to speed. There's a landing qualification also. They have to have five or six landings in the last 90 days. So they get those when they go in the simulator. And then they will be by a check airman to see if they're up to speed and their quality of their flying has not deteriorated since they've been off, and then up or down and on the check ride, and they put them on the line and they're ready to go to work.
Well, and one thing is for sure, if you have a son or a daughter or even grandchildren that are approaching the end of their high school days, dads and moms, it's up to you. There aren't many occupations for the youth of tomorrow more invigorating and more promising, perhaps even more lucrative, more exciting with new technology. Joel mentioned drones, and the world is changing, and you got to know how to operate those things, especially in tomorrow's military world. And your son or daughter can have their private pilot's license in a matter of months, graduate to other ratings, such as Bill Stull has done over the last few years, fly up the ladder quickly, like Bill Stull has done over the last few years, and gain some of these pilot positions. And it does allow the kids of today to get their occupation and their employment going much sooner than if they spend 4 years chasing skirts and drinking beer. The aviation industry's hungry for new talent. Retiring levels are increasingly becoming more of a problem. The industry needs youth, and the industry needs sober youth. And it is important for dads out there to remember their kids are going to leave that home, that nest, and go out on their own. And I, as a father, man, it always worried me, always, what my kids are going to do once they leave the home. And fortunately, two of them, the first two went military. And my third son is an extremely responsible a manager of a warehouse.
I guess you did all right.
I did good. Okay. I'm very fortunate.
It sounded like Gar said that the pilots were getting put back into stimulators.
No, he said simulators.
The full motion stimulators.
He did not say stimulator.
That's what it sounded like.
You know how to get good stimulation?
Well, I listen
from
to
a
the
good
show.
Stimulator.
Whoa.
It's 9:18 on the High Flying Show. Today's show is brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers. It's also a great day to play golf. Take Dad out to the Hidden Hills Golf Club. It is one of the few courses in this town with rolling elevation. There aren't many that have that. In fact, it may be the highest point of elevation in Jacksonville is on the 10th tee at Hidden Hills Golf Club.
It is.
It's also a great day to go to the Casa Marina Hotel and Restaurant and enjoy their Sunday brunch. Sunday brunch is world famous, at least here in the Deep South. It's Deep South famous. And we appreciate Mark Vandeleu's support. The Casa Marina Hotel and Restaurant, located just between 6th and 7th Street, North Jacksonville Beach, right on the ocean. Might not go upstairs to the penthouse after you go to brunch and have a cocktail and sit out on the deck and observe what happens on the beach today. Matt LeVay's running the board for us here on the High Flying Show. He's brand new to us. We enjoy having you here, Matt. And we'll be right back right after these words.
Now back to your pilot in command. High Flying with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener. Presented by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Ten XL on this Sunday morning. And David Crosby did this, remember? When he was with the Birds. Probably don't. You guys are too young.
Wasn't born then.
Yeah. I'm only 50.
Eight
I know it's the Birds.
Miles
I know it's
high
Crosby.
Fly. Let's listen to David Crosby. 8 miles high. Birds were great, man. They did some good stuff back in the 60s and early 70s. Let's talk to Bill Stull here for a moment.
What's up?
Here on the High Flying Show, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers. Bill, as typical on the High Flying Show, I ask you to give us what I refer to as an AWOS, Automated Weather Observation System report, which is also known as a METAR, I guess, a meteorological report. Can you give me an update on what's going on out there for the general aviation pilot?
Yes, but first let me just tell you this. You're not wrong. It comes from an AWOS station. The AWOS station is actually what generates the weather report.
And it's automated, right?
Yes, it is. All so right. Hence the A.
All right.
It is ugly out there. Yeah. I mean, it's just rainy, but it's nasty. Half an hour ago, the ceiling was 1,500 feet. Now it's 9,500 feet. It's a rapidly changing dynamic environment.
So it's getting better.
It's getting better at the moment.
Yeah.
However, that's our airport is looking a lot better. But okay. There are other airports around the city that are socked in that are just solid IFR.
Such as St. Aug or Herlong or
Herlong.
Cecil. Or
Herlong is IFR right now.
It is. Mm-hmm. Well, and Craig Field's not IFR.
No, Craig is very VFR right now. Mm-hmm. But as I said, half an hour ago it was not, and half an hour from now it may not be.
All right, to the average layman and laywoman, explain to them what you just said. Craig Field is now VFR.
Right.
And Cecil or whatever is IFR. Explain briefly the difference between.
In order to have VFR weather, you have to have a ceiling that's at least 1,000 feet, and you have to have at least 3 miles of visibility. And a little while ago, because of the rain, the ceiling was 1,500 feet, and the visibility was a little less than 3 miles. So technically, it was IFR.
Right. Which is instrument flight rules,
which means
you're flying the plane by the instruments in the plane.
That's right, because you can't see enough out the window to be able to reliably
or
do it.
At all. Mm-hmm. Or at all. And VFR is what I am, a visual flight rules pilot, which is I'm looking outside the airplane.
Right.
I'm seeing what I have to see in order to negotiate.
And there are certain legal minimums in order to make that happen. And so as long as you have enough visibility and enough of a ceiling, you're good to go.
Also, Bill, there's been questions about rights of ways on taxiways and in the air. And I'd like to ask you briefly how you would handle this situation.
Okay.
You announce on a 45 to downwind, and shortly after, another airplane calls in a 5-mile final for the same runway.
Okay.
Who has the right of way in that situation, Bill?
Well, if I am on a 45 to a downwind, I still don't know the distance that I am from the airport. So let's assume I'm closer to the airport.
All right. Well, I think that you're in the pattern, I would say.
Okay. So if I'm in the pattern, then because of 91.113, I would technically have the right of way, assuming that that other aircraft is not in distress, assuming we're both airplanes. As long as the category is the same, then I would have the right of way.
What is 91.113? What are you saying there? What is that gobbledygook? What does that mean?
According to the
that
code of
the law.
Title 14, Title 14 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 91, Subpart 113, those are the rules of right of way for aviation. Part 91 governs a lot of the flying that we do.
This is why I hate Bill. I hate him with a passion.
Yes,
because he is that dude who can read something, and go and read it verbatim, and give me the number. I struggle to know what the heck is going on.
Well, in fact, nobody cares that I know the number.
No, you care that you know the number,
right? Right.
And when you spout it off, you insult me.
Oh.
You were very easily insulted.
No, I was very upset.
Come on,
about
that's
that.
Not the only way I
no,
insult you.
You insult me in a lot of different ways, but I'm just saying that was one of them. But anyway.
Well, you know, it's kind of nice not to have Gar in the studio. So now you're arguing with Bill. In fact, Gar, I'm bring Gar back up here, Matt. Gar, there's a situation we talked about of pilots returning. The mechanics are now battling, Gar. What I read here recently, they're battling to keep rattlesnakes off the parked planes. Have been sitting out there in the desert for a while. That would be kind of an interesting thing to be in the cockpit, and all of a sudden a rattler starts coming out from behind the console.
Well, when they take the aircraft to the boneyard, the cockpit is pretty much sealed up. I don't understand how those snakes are getting into the airplane, because they pretty much mothball them and make them so they're pretty stuff doesn't get into it, especially the dust and the snakes. I'm surprised at that. And in the boneyard where the airplanes are. Stored, you generally don't have anybody sitting in the cockpit because everything's closed up. But, however, there's one more point, and that is these aircraft that took in a lot of service that the airlines were to be using during the COVID process that we went through. Now, a lot of those aircraft have been sitting on runways and taxiways in the Southwest where there are a lot of snakes. And there may have been a few snakes that slithered into those jet airplanes that the airlines fly. And I would hope to heck that they would have a very concise pre-flight and make a huge amount of observation on those airplanes before they put them back in service.
So the next time I pre-flight the plane, I've got to be on the lookout for rattlesnakes. Joel, do you ever run into any situations?
I've had two or three times over the 20 years at Craig Airport that I'll go in the hangar and there'll be a corn snake or a
king snake.
The only time I ever saw a water moccasin was out in the pond. Yeah. Where the runoff is, and you'll see some water moccasins out there, and they crawl back in the ditches whenever. But I've had a couple of corn snakes or some rat snakes in the hangars before.
Well, that ain't going to hurt you.
No.
Perhaps
it give you a little shock when you walk in and there's a snake rolling around the floor in the hangar.
Gives me the shivers.
Have you considered the possibility that the snakes have heard about the hiring ventures that all the airlines
are
putting forth?
Snakes are.
And perhaps these snakes are just seeking their pilot certificates.
Now, I did have a situation. I was flying around one day, minding my own business, and there was a wasp that appeared in the cockpit and started
the worst.
Buzz around me. And I was, and still am, a rookie at this, and I'm starting to wig. And then I remember everything Joel says. He says, "Fly that airplane." And so I cracked the window just a hair. I think I did. I cracked something.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I cracked my head on the windshield.
Some would argue there were snakes in the airplanes long before they took them to the boneyard.
Could be. Now, Gar's also, he's on the phone still with us. Gar, the Navy, you're a naval pilot, or used to be, and the Navy quietly rolled out their first maternity flight suits for women. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, well, I saw that coming years ago when they decided they were going to allow females to be naval aviators. You're still going to have those gals getting married and, of course, wanting kids. So the Navy can't put them out of the squadrons or take them out of service for 9 months while they're going through the process of having a baby. So these gals go to work. Now, some of them have come off flying status, depending what kind of airplanes they're flying. And so they may not be on the flying status after the first trimester. I don't know the exact rules. But there are definitely some aircraft, pregnant ladies aren't flying them on active duty until they have their babies and get back into the swing of things.
Very politically correct. Go ahead, finish that up.
However, though, when the flight suit coming out now, they just decided that they're going to provide some flight suits for the ladies that can be more comfortable in them when they're in a pregnant state.
Yeah,
so,
that's a
truth. We can see that coming.
You're really going to fly a fighter when you're pregnant?
That's what I said. There's some aircraft that are not allowed to have the women in the cockpit when they're pregnant.
Okay.
You know, so the point being this is they're going to err on the side of safety, obviously. And, you know, an expectant mother, I would think, who flies a jet airplane is thinking twice about going up and flying in her second, third trimester and pulling 6 G's being pregnant. I mean, that just doesn't make sense.
I would think the third trimester especially. Gar, also in the world of commercial planes, Delta planes had a little incident in the Atlanta airport recently. A flight to L.A. was delayed two Delta planes clipped wings, and also an American Airlines jet knocked down a light pole in Dallas at DFW. How does that happen, man? What's going on with it?
Well, I saw articles on both those incidents, and the American pilot taxiing out through the throat to go into the parallel taxiway where he was going off the ramp. It's a kind of a restricted area, not a restricted area, but a smaller area to taxi with. So there was actually a throat where he goes through to get out to the taxiway. And he was just not thinking, and there was a big light standard there that lights up the ramp, and he took that lamp right down to the ground and put it in the dirt. And, of course, that delayed the flight, and they've got to fix the airplane because that airplane is going to have damage from hitting that light pole. Now, the other thing, that the two Delta planes, they were passing not parallel, but back to front. And they couldn't see each other, but they knew there were a taxi situation. And they just got too close and took their wingtips off. And I've seen that several times in my flying career at the big airports. I remember one night in Chicago O'Hare, the 747 just knocked the tail right off an Air Wisconsin twin engine. I can't remember what it was. And it happens. So you just got to be more vigilant on the field. And there's a lot of activity out there. You have to really have self-awareness to what's going on around you when you're taxiing, because you're blind totally behind you at all.
Well, especially now, Joel says it's really, really busy out there, and it's the bigger airports especially. It's 9:34 on the High Flying Show, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers. A couple of quick notes. We're going to talk to the Wiener, our birthday boy, after the break about mountain flying. Also, Ascent Aviation's John Nafak will not be here today, but he is the certified flight instructor commander, I guess, out at Ascent Aviation at Hurlong Field. And if you're interested in learning how to fly, I highly encourage you to call Ascent Aviation and talk to the experts out there. They have a lot of airplanes, a lot of instructors, and they can get you in the air quickly. And on the way to the beach today, stop by Angie Subs and grab I don't know if they're open Sunday now that I think about it, but he may be. I hope he is, because I'm promoting it. But Ed Malin, Angie Subs, best Peruvian in town. We will return to the High Flying Show after these words.
Now back to your pilot in command. High Flying with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener. Presented by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words...
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the High Flying Show on this Father's Day 2021. And a happy Father's Day to all you dads out there who have kids, grandkids. It's a great day for dads to be able to spend time with their children, and especially if they're young children.
New dads.
Yeah, if you got a new baby in the house.
Special shout
out
to Chris, who will be a new dad pretty soon.
Who's that?
One of the guys that Joel flies for. Joel.
Chief pilot. Chief pilot. Chris.
Yep. Don't forget Ian, who this is his first Father's Day.
Yes, right. Ian's first Father's Day. He got the day off.
He flies banners for Joel. So big day for these new fathers. It's pretty cool.
I remember my first son was born on June 17th in whatever year it was, and the 1980, right?
Okay, yeah. That would be
9 years
different.
That. Let's see, 90, 2000, 2000.
Yes, sir. It's 90.
You're counting with your fingers, Jack.
Yeah.
Federal air regulation.
So he's 41 now, but my ex-wife, who is his mother, It was a long labor. I mean, it was like 18 hours. And the second time, my second child, Casey, was like 10 minutes. I guess the female body learns how to have that baby after they practice it once.
And your wife was wearing those new flight suits too, right?
Yes, if you say so. All right, now let's talk to Joel Wiener, my birthday boy and my co-host, the guy taught me how to fly an airplane. And by the way, how's the beach banner business? Is going well?
It's doing good. Yeah. We were supposed to fly yesterday, and the little weather in the morning shut us down. And today, it's going to do it again. We're going to get wet.
Man, you know, especially on the weekends, that's your prime time.
Yeah, that's when the people are outside. That's when we do most of our advertising.
Especially this weekend with the Orange Crush.
We had all kinds of things going over with the Crush.
However, apparently Orange Crush has fizzled out to nothing. I was driving around Jack's Beach last night when I got back from the fights, and hardly any traffic, hardly any sign of anything going on. So maybe it was all to do about nothing.
Some people that sent some pictures of things that were going on. They didn't get started till late afternoon because it rained till 4 or 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about mountain flying, Joel. The flying experience from doing frequent trips across or parallel to mountain ranges such as the Appalachian in the east or the Rockies in the west. I guess there's few more helpless feelings than nailing the airplane's best climb airspeed and then watching the vertical speed indicator show a 500 feet per minute descent.
Well, the big thing in the mountain is visibility, number one. Can you see the mountain?
Yeah.
Number two is the wind, because the winds will get down in the valleys and shift. And if you get a wind from the west that comes up over the ridge, you'll get on the backside, you'll get a roll on the top of the ridge, and you can't outclimb that.
When you're approaching mountain ranges, obviously you always think ahead, 2-3 steps ahead. You know you're coming into it. Is your goal to go way above them, or can you kind of go?
My worst ride into Vail, Colorado, I was flying a Pilatus, and we come over top of Denver at 25,000 feet on a descent. In Vail, you start the approach at 14,000.
Yeah.
Coming over the top of the mountain and going down through the valley, and there's step downs. Every step down, each fix, about every 5 or 6 miles, you step down 1,000 feet.
Okay.
And you do this all the way in on a 20-mile final to the runway. We brief it. Cockpit, we briefed that thing for an hour before we get there, and the weather was, not the nicest weather. It's Denver.
Now, how much of a factor does heat, if it's really hot like it is out there now?
Well, that goes into another factor, is you get a high density altitude, but the big thing is the altitude we're worried about is freezing levels.
Oh, yeah.
And ice on the airplane. Visibility that you can see the mountain. And then the third thing would be the wind. And with heat, there comes wind and rising. And then you worry about that coming over top of the ridge. You want to give yourself a couple thousand feet.
Are there any big differences between flying out over the Rockies or flying over the Appalachians, or is it comparable?
It's just the altitude difference. Yesterday, Bill and I went to Blairsville, Georgia, which is over the ridge just north of Atlanta. And you land east and west because the ridges run east and west.
All right.
And last night when we come out, went in the clouds at 800 feet, and we're climbing up, and you got to climb to 6,400 feet before you can turn left.
Holy mackerel.
Because you need 1,000 feet above the ridge line for clearance.
It's where you really need an experienced pilot.
Lucky to live in Florida.
Oh, and I was telling the owner of the airplane as we were coming out, I was saying, hey, make sure you're back here by 6:30. I said, I don't want to get caught here after dark. Because I want to be able to at least see the trees and the ridge as I'm climbing out. If you have any problem, in the emergency side, to be able to come back.
Have you ever flown into Charleston, West Virginia?
Yeah, top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, you land. It's like a postage stamp on the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
That's when you're landing there and your depth perception, it's way off because it's just it's the ridge on top of the mountain.
Right.
We stopped in there for fuel one afternoon. That was different.
Were you nervous? You never get
nervous. Nah, it's just you fly the airplane.
That was a dumb question. I'm sorry, Jack.
For a lot of my people that rent my airplanes here, they want to get a mountain experience, and I tell them to go to Asheville. I said, go in the morning.
Right.
And if the winds are over 20 knots at the airport, don't go because it will beat you up.
Happened to me.
I told him when he left. It was blowing 25 knots.
Oh, yeah.
And
so what'd you do, Bob?
I flew the airplane.
Did you land the airplane?
Slow it down to maneuvering speed?
So it was one of those situations where it was smooth up. I had a lot of headwind, but it was smooth. And then once I got near the mountains, it got rough as all get out. It was the roughest flight I'd ever, last 10 minutes. And I remember my hand was sweating, and I was coming in, and oh, my God, this is crazy. The plane's all over the place. And the thing I kept reminding myself was fly the airplane. And that's, Joel taught me that. Just
fly
the plane.
What were you flying? What plane?
Little Piper Aero, single engine thing.
Oh.
Went to pick up my wife. It was crazy. It was absolutely. Guy behind me didn't. He balked on the landing. He just went around. He said, I'm not going to do it. Came in later.
Really?
Yeah. And once I got over the runway, it was no big deal. But that last 5 miles was something. Yeah, it was crazy. So.
It's 9:45 on the High Flying Show, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers. Thank you, Bob, for that enlightening development there on your trip to wherever the heck you went.
Asheville. Pay attention.
Joel, I promised to talk a little bit about buying and selling and owning an airplane, and there's several myths about this, and own plenty of airplanes. You have over the years.
Yeah.
How many airplanes have you bought and sold over the years?
Well, I don't know how many I've bought and sold over the years, but I have 9 right now in the fleet. So
Okay. You do?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, you got to pay attention.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
Some of them are in maintenance. You know why you have three? Because you can only fly one at a time, but the other two are parts. But no, we disassembled one, took the wings off last year. Bob and I have a project.
Yes, that's so, correct. We're going to recover
an airplane. It's an airplane, but it's a project. That's probably a 3 or 4 year project.
Yeah.
To rebuild an airplane.
Yeah. Or if I have no life, it'll be about 6 months.
If you have no wife, it'll
life.
Oh, life. Oh.
See, he's on the verge of retirement.
I'm close to retiring, Jack.
And all right. Well, let me run these by you.
Okay.
All right. Pay special attention to the aircraft title if you're buying a plane.
Well, aircrafts are registered. They're not titled. And there's a registration and an airworthiness certificate. Those are the two items that you need.
Contrary to popular belief, a factory rebuilt engine doesn't cost that much.
They're expensive.
Yeah.
For the 4-seat airplanes that we've used for rentals, the overhauled engine is $24,000. That means you take your engine off, ship it off, wait 6 or 8 weeks. The last ones that I sent out, I had a real good turnaround. Pinnacle Aircraft Engines over in Alabama. They turned my airplane engine around in 28 days.
That's fast.
We boxed it up, put it in a truck. They had a truck the next day. They tore it apart. I had it back in 28 days. We were back flying within 30 days. And I hands off. I told him, hey, do this for me. He's now built three engines for me. So,
what's the cost versus a new one?
A new one, if you buy a Lycoming new one, you would add another $15,000 to it. So about $34,000.
An extensive history of damage isn't a cause to worry.
Well, there's damage history, and then you got to look. The big thing is, has an airplane ever been geared up? So somebody landed with the landing gear up.
Oh.
Also, if somebody came in and did a hard landing and bent the nose strut, which is attached to, basically that everything's attached to the engine mount.
Yeah.
And if they were hit hard, and they're key points. Now, I've had airplanes that I bought that had those damages. And you just got to adjust the price accordingly.
Right.
But the way you catch that, whenever you're pre-flighting and you open the door and you look the battery door and you look in on the firewall, if there's any wrinkles on the firewall,
yeah,
or where it's mounted, and you'll see where there's patches where
they tried to cover it up.
Well, they reinforce it.
Yeah. Oh.
Because
oh.
It was bent, so they do a reinforcement around about a 4 to 6 inch patch around each of the mounts.
You know when you get a car and you go on a Carfax and see if there's any damage, like it got hit in the rear, I'm not going to buy the car.
Mm.
You wouldn't do that with an airplane. It's inspected way more, so you feel confident that the airplane's going to fly, which is the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Always look for factory-provided features. Installing them afterward is a waste of money.
In the airplanes we have, a lot of them were built back 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
86, they stopped manufacturing single-engine airplanes for a few years. A lot of people didn't get a lot of the creature comforts in there. So many of those airplanes don't have air conditioning. None of them had GPS prior to 1990.
Right.
So they are expensive to install down the road. There is a shop here in town, Bragg Avionics, and that's what they do. They're putting new autopilots in airplanes. They're installing all glass panel instruments. So you're pulling all the old round dial gauges out, the six packs, and putting glass. You know, it's like a big iPad on the screen.
Yeah.
And Garmin makes good product, and they're doing a lot of those.
The GPS replacing VOR for all intents.
Yeah, basically the GPS is replacing all the
navigation. That's happening in air traffic as well. They're getting rid of – they're phasing that out because the company that made the parts no longer makes the parts.
So there used to be routes, VOR routes between like Craig and Daytona and Ormond Beach. Now they were V routes. Now they're coming out with T routes, and everything is –
Yeah, so
GPS.
Back when Gar flew, back in 1930,
when he had the ADF transmitter.
Yeah, right. They were getting rid of all the FM radio stations you navigate by, and they're all going to GPS.
Last question for you, Joel, on this. Pay attention to state rules. If the taxes are the same, some states have different conditions for aircraft registration.
Correct. Now, the registration is a federal thing, so it's going through Oklahoma City, and I recommend using the Airplane Owner and Pilot Association and using a service. To do that, it speeds up the process. I did my own. I bought an airplane. The last one I bought was in February, and it took 4 months for me to get the paperwork processed.
Well, didn't you tell me you're waiting on paperwork?
I just got one. I bought it the 29th of January. I just got the paperwork in the mail last Friday.
Yeah.
So
All right, it's 9:51. This is the High Flying Show. A new Space Force satellite just took off for space from an L-1011. We'll have that story next on the High Flying Show.
Now back to your pilot in command. High Flying with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener. Presented by your First Coast Honda dealers.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then.
And speaking of high, this is the High Flying Show with Jack O'Brien, Joel Wiener, Bill Stull, Robert Cam, Garfield Benson, and today we're graced with Matt LeVay. And it's great to have you with us. Thank you for listening. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers. Got a couple of shakes left. Want to talk briefly about Oshkosh and Air Venture. Now we're back in July for those glorious days in July. The Oshkosh Tower, busiest on the planet.
Most fun you'll ever have with your clothes on, Jack.
How many planes come in and out of there over a week?
I want to say something in the neighborhood of like 10,000.
That's hard to understand and comprehend. Crazy. That's a small airport.
Yeah, well, it's big actually, but it's when you're in the tower and you're working and then you go home at the end of the day and you see all these airplanes on the ground, you go, where'd they come from?
Now, standard runway separation requirements, are they thrown out the window for that thing?
No, so they'll reduce them. So, like normal single-engine little airplanes, we normally runway separation 3,000 feet. For this event, we will do 1,500.
Uh-huh.
So we shorten it up a little bit.
What's the deal with the different color codes on the runways?
So, they're actually 1,500 feet apart.
Yeah.
Good segue there. Right? The reason we use them is so that we can put more airplanes on the runway at the same time, so we'll spot them off. Land on a pink spot, land on a green spot, land on a purple spot, those kind of things. So we actually have a visual cue of what the separation we need on the runway is, and it also gives the pilot something to aim for.
Bill, what would you recommend as a prep if you haven't flown into Oshkosh before and after, or if you've been there before, but it's been a few years? What is the standard operational fundamental prep about going into Oshkosh?
Fly with Joel and Bob.
Ah, good answer. Now, Joel, do you have any special thing that you do when you go
I've done arrivals there any way you can do them. We've done the normal arrival. I've done the IFR arrival. I've gone into the Fond du Lac, done the arrival there. And it's all in prep. And you got to go follow. I mean, they've got them rules where you go to what is the little town you go
Ripon,
to?
Ripon, the home of the Republican, birthplace of Republican Party.
Right. And you fly up the railroad tracks, and there's strobe lights on the track. And then you go to Fisk, which is where Bob's sitting there in a tent with a radio and some binoculars, and he sees you coming, and he'll tell you which runway to go to.
Short approaches are another one you want to practice as a pilot. Short approaches.
It's all about prep.
We have 1 minute left. Okay, briefly, let's switch over to Gar. I want to ask Gar about the Space Force satellite just took off from an L-1011. Gar, are you familiar with this story?
I have not read that story. I'm quite surprised that they launched it from a 1011. That's a pretty old airplane.
Well, the Endeavor is a Space Force effort to generate space launches without fixed launch pads. That just happened out in California. So next month on the High Flying Show, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Thanks to Garfield Benson, our naval aviator and commercial airline pilot. He joins us every month on the High Flying Show. Robert Cam, our air traffic control expert and now instrument-rated pilot. Bill Stull, commercial pilot, instrument-rated pilot. How many other ratings you got now?
Helicopter? No, wait, no. No, nothing.
He's working on it.
And Joel Wiener, our birthday boy and my co-host, the Wiener. And this has been the High Flying Show brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers. I'm Jack O'Brien. We will see you in July. Have a great Father's Day, everybody.